Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Michelle Cohen, and you are officially on the couch here on LA Talk Radio, the world's most irreverent, entertaining, and cool internet talk radio station. Hey guys, how you doing? So nice to have y'all here. All y'all. We're going to be talking to one of absolutely my favorite guests. I mean it. Absolutely. And he's live in the studios today, so that's really cool because many times folks, you know, call from all over the world and we're just having an interview via phone, which is nice. But Keith McPherson is actually live here in the studio. And gosh, I think around January we interviewed together, right, Keith?
That's right.
Yeah.
It's so nice to be back here, Michelle. I'm so happy to be here with you.
Yay! Thank you for traveling all the way.
All the way from Canada.
The journey, you know, so that, you know, it's just, it's so nice to have you here. And you're doing a book tour and you're also, gosh, you led a whole convention basically, didn't you, recently?
I did, just up north from here, around Monterey. I was at a place called 1440 Multiversity, absolutely beautiful spot in the Redwoods.
How cool.
It really was. Yeah, we had a whole weekend of mindfulness. It was an incredible training. I did it with Summer McStravick,
who nice.
Is actually from down here.
Yes.
She's an incredible woman as well, and
yeah,
we co-facilitated it.
Oh, so. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I'm lucky enough to have you in the studio today. Yay. And like I said, you were here in January of this year, and your book had pretty much just come out.
It was hot off the press.
Hot off the press. And it still is.
Yes.
It's called Making Sense of Mindfulness. 5 principles to integrate mindfulness practice into your everyday life. So, guys, you really got to check this out. If you'd like to call in, folks, I usually say just email me at straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. You can do that and ask questions to Keith as we dive into more information about his book and how you can just sort of make your life a little better. And it's comfortable stuff. It's not like, oh, you have to go through all these machinations to get your brain into higher consciousness, you know, all that stuff that I do all the time.
It
with
can get
people.
So complicated, can it?
Yeah, and it's like, oh,
yeah,
really, I can't do this. But so you can give me a call if you like. 323-203-0815. Folks, 323-203-0815. That's a beautiful Los Angeles area code. So go for that if you'd like to be live here on Skype and ask Keith any questions. Well, questions pertaining to his book. Well, you can ask him anything, right?
Sure.
You're so cool.
I'm open. I'm open to any question that comes through the airwaves. That's
okay,
fine.
Cool. By the way, we're live on LA Talk Radio's Facebook page. So if you want to see us, see who you're talking to, if you'd like to call in, just go live on LA Talk Radio's Facebook page and say, oh, there they are. Wow, they really are in the studio. They're not these like remote people sitting on their patio in their pajamas.
This is a rarity these days that we're actually in person on radio like this.
I know.
You know?
It is.
I could totally Skype
is.
You, Zoom you, Facebook you. I don't
exactly.
know. Exactly. But no, we're going to do this live like old school.
Woo!
This is old school radio.
That's
wonderful.
That's exactly what it is. Old school radio, honey.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. So, you know, everybody is always interested about mindfulness. I have a lot of clients who come in and they say, do you do mindfulness psychotherapy? And I'm saying, well, yeah, I do that. But it's you have gone way beyond describing how to be more mindful for readers in your book, Making Sense of Mindfulness. And there's a lot more involved. Again, it's not that difficult. There are simplistic concepts, but they are really true scientific concepts you have, and spiritual as well. So if you could just sort of clarify maybe for listeners, what is your idea of mindfulness in our lives?
Yeah, well, you know, I love children's books because they're so simple and they're so easy to understand.
Yeah,
and
they totally are.
When I was working on this book and trying to make sense of the word mindfulness, I was drawn to this author. Her name is Susan Kaiser Greenland, and she does a lot of work in the field of mindfulness for children.
Mm-hmm.
And I love her definition of mindfulness.
Yes.
It rings very true to me. She says, mindfulness is paying attention in the present moment to yourself, other people, and the world around you with kindness.
Now,
it sounds so simple. Of course I'm going to be kind to myself and everyone around me. But when
sort of, right?
When you start thinking about even just that first part, paying attention with kindness to yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, how often is it that we're up in our brain and we're just completely beating ourselves up in our head, thinking we need to do more, be more, get more? So many of us have kind of, we're on autopilot with these negative thoughts in our mind.
Yes.
So I think that one of the main things about mindfulness, one of the key things, is to remember that in this present moment, you have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
You can choose to be in a state of beating yourself up or building yourself up.
Wow.
Right?
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Beating yourself up or building yourself
just
up.
With your thinking.
You know, isn't that amazing? And, you know, there's all these studies about, you know, how the thoughts that fire together, wire together. And the more we get up in the morning and we start thinking, oh my gosh, I have to go to work and I have to do this. And we're just kind of feeling yucky. And because we didn't really prepare ourselves the night before we went into that nice REM state.
Exactly.
And we don't prepare ourselves for our day to sort of create the kind of day we want and just be open for the universe to bring us stuff and all that. So, I mean, that's really an important thing to do. Right.
It is. I mean, you know, in some of the studies I was reading, our mind thinks up to 60,000 thoughts a day.
Yes.
And what they were saying is up to 80% of those thoughts tend to be like chronic repetitive thoughts, meaning we think the same thoughts every day.
Right.
And 90% in the study I was reading said that the chronic thoughts tend to be negative in nature.
Yes, 90%
of them.
They
you know,
do.
Like you said, like you wake up in the morning, oh, I'm so tired. This is going to be a long day. Oh, how hard is this going to be, right? We don't even realize we're thinking these thoughts. So,
it's so true. They're automatic. They're habitual.
They really are.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of these key mindfulness practices, first thing in the morning when you wake up, is to start tuning into what are my thoughts and how am I going to move through the day?
Yes.
You know, even this is going to be a great day ahead.
Yeah.
The people I meet are going to be exactly on time. And even when it doesn't seem like they are, it is, you know?
I really do understand what you're saying because it's just like that. And again, the more we think those thoughts, the more we feed those neural patterns and they become just habitual. And when we really start changing up our thoughts, and you're going to talk about that because you have great steps so folks can really learn principles. We're going to talk about those five principles too. Guys, you got to tune in. And if you have to, whatever you're doing, if you have to defocus and go back to whatever you're doing, work, what a concept. You have to go back to work. Well, okay. But you can listen to the show as soon as we get off the air and you know, get back up on those five principles of mindfulness. We're going to be talking about that, how to just sort of set the tone of your day, get your act together a little bit more so your life will be better, more creative, and things like that. So, all right. So, yeah, there, like we said, there's been a lot of books on mindfulness and different ideas. And it is about the present moment, you know. But what was it and what were the things that made you decide to sort of jump into this mindfulness thing?
Well, you know, I didn't really have much of a choice, to be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Two things happened. One, about 12 years ago now, I was teaching yoga.
Yes.
And I had a friend who came up to me at the end of class.
Yeah.
And they said, I have this group of teachers that are looking for a professional development day on mindfulness. And because you teach yoga, like, would you be willing to come in and lead them through a day of mindfulness? And me being a yes person, if you know what I mean by that,
yeah.
I said, yeah, of course I would love to do that. So the next thing I know, I'm in this room with a group of teachers And I realized that I said yes to something I don't know a lot about, mindfulness at the time. I'm like, what is this word? So we spent about 5 minutes talking about what is mindfulness to you, and then we did yoga. And after that, I was like, I need to get into gear on what does this actually mean?
Yeah.
So I've spent the last 10 years approximately of my life really researching what is this practice all about? And ironically, as I was researching it, this word became more and more popular in the mm-hmm. culture.
Yes.
As we get busier and busier with technology and all the craziness right now.
Right, right.
So I didn't have much of a choice. And about 5 years ago, I have this morning practice where I meditate and I do some yoga and I write a page in my journal.
Mm-hmm.
And one particular morning about 5 years ago, I was handwriting in my journal and my hand just kept going.
Whoa.
And I had about 10 pages that morning. And I got this cue that this was going to turn into a book. Now,
wait
I don't
know. Were you like channeling or something?
It felt like I was channeling. It literally, they talk about that automatic writing.
Oh, sure.
My hand literally just kept going and I was getting these kind of almost downloads of ideas.
Mm.
And I got this cue, you're going to be writing a book. And the resistance was so big. It was like, what do you know about writing a book? You can't write a book. You're not an author. What are you? But I just was so intrigued. I kept going back every day to writing. And about a year later, I had two scribblers full of this book.
Yes.
So that's how this all became an actual work in progress. And then now in the world, making sense of mindfulness.
Yes, exactly. And yeah. I know you studied within your background. You did a lot of sort of research with mindfulness or meditative techniques, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Along the way, actually, very interesting was that I actually wasn't pulled so much into the Buddhist practice of mindfulness. It kind of stemmed from ancient Hawaii for me.
Yeah.
Which is very rare.
That's so
I think.
Cool.
Yeah. There was a Hawaiian shaman that I met along the way in my studies of this, and she changed my life. And
yes.
What I started realizing was that the ancient Hawaiians had this amazing practice in their culture of presence and how to come back to the present moment and all of the sacred healings in that culture.
Wow.
And I realized that this is actually a lot like what mindfulness is.
Yes,
so,
it is.
So, yeah, a lot of my background stems, although I'm from Canada and I look nothing like a Hawaiian, I realized that it's there's a lot to be said about that culture and about the ways that they live. So,
yes, exactly. Oh, that's amazing.
So a lot of the principles in the book are developed from this whole practice of being in Hawaii.
Yeah. Well, there really is something about that environment too. I mean, you know, I've been to Hawaii a lot and all the islands, and it's just my favorite place to go and meditate and just be in the water and just be part of the fish environment.
Oh, I know. Well, the word Hawaii.
Yes.
Ha in Hawaii means breath. Ha.
Yes. Oh, I love it.
And in mindfulness, we talk all the time about breathing and how to come back. So ha is breath, and vai, W-A-I, means water.
Love it.
And the Hawaiians believe that when you combine breath and water, those two elements that make us up, really, we're water and breath.
We are.
You get the I at the end of Hawaii, which means consciousness, spirit, connection, creativity. So when we're breathing and we're connecting to that flow like water, we move into this creative state and everything becomes alive and we're aware of it all. And it's just, I see it in you.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah.
I used to be a big practitioner of Ho'onopono.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's all in keeping with the love and the kindness. And you don't really speak words to people and helping them heal, you know, in psychiatric facilities and just in general, you know, healing. And it's just putting that vibration out and encouraging and loving and letting individuals know. This is the short and dirty
version. Ho'onopono,
Ho'onopono.
Absolutely.
It's really amazing. But so you got these concepts from your past, and you were doing this a long time ago. I would imagine as a little guy, you were tuned in, right?
I was. You know, there was always a sense of the sacred and just being curious about the present moment.
Yeah.
Although I didn't realize it at the time.
Yes, yes.
Did
exactly.
I don't know if I've told you this about
you
the seventh grade.
Yeah, no.
I was in grade 7, I think, when I first had a moment of mindfulness where I didn't realize it at the time, but I was failing French class in grade 7.
Mm.
In Canada, we have to study French.
Mon Dieu.
Oh, mon Dieu. That means, oh my God. That's right.
That's about all I know.
There I am in grade 7. So I go to my teacher at the end of the day and I'm like, is there anything I could do to get my grade up in French?
Yeah.
And my teacher's kind enough to give me an extra assignment. She says, you get one chance. As long as it has something to do with French, I'll give you a chance to pass.
Right.
So I go home that night. my mom's got this guitar laying around at the house, and I pick it up and I'm learning a few chords, and all of a sudden it dawns on me, I could actually translate an old Bob Dylan song into French.
Wow.
So I translate Blowing in the Wind into Souffle dans le vent, which means blowing in the wind.
Oh, that's very cool.
I record it, if you remember this, on a cassette tape.
Yes.
And I hand that in as my project, and I end up getting an A plus on the assignment.
Woo! Yeah.
It gets my grade up to a D minus in French. And my
and you passed.
I passed. Right. My teacher comes back and says, do you want to sing this song in front of the school? I say, absolutely not. That's the last
the
thing
school.
I want to do in the seventh
what?
Grade.
Yeah, exactly.
But eventually I cave in. I say, okay, I'll do it. So there's this school assembly, and I get up and I start playing Souffle dans le vent in front of all my classmates and the whole school. And my worst nightmare starts coming true. I'm up there playing, and I look out and I can see Stephanie, who I have a crush on, laughing with Maria and Daniel. All my classmates, they're all laughing. The whole school starts laughing. And this very loud voice comes up in my head that only I can hear. And it's screaming at me, run for the hills. This was such a bad idea. How could you get up and sing in front of your school with your voice cracking? This is terrible.
Oh.
And anyways, in the middle of all of that, I get this little whisper that pops in, and it reminds me that I just learned the chords to a kid's song called The Cat Came Back.
Right?
So I break into that in the middle of just totally failing in front of my whole school, and all of a sudden the energy in the school gym changes, and everybody starts singing along with me.
Oh,
and I remember I look out and I see everybody singing, and I think, I could do this for the rest of my life. Like, this is so powerful.
Yes.
And I look back and I think about this, and this to me was like really a foundation of mindfulness practice.
That is lovely.
You know, when a good song comes on.
That's right.
And everybody starts singing along. All these things that separate us on the surface kind of fade away while the song is on.
Yes.
And we realize that we're actually all connected. We really
God, we
are all connected.
We really are.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just quantum, and it's, you know, right now it's old school, but everybody knows that we really are connected, and there really is something about the beauty of activities that are in the now, and music is for me one of, because you're just in the beats, and if you're playing, as you know, as a musician, who you had a very successful band, my gosh, didn't you win like American Idol or something in Canada?
Canadian Idol.
Oh my
god. Yeah, I was a finalist on that show.
Oh my gosh, how did that feel, being on that stage and just in national television, and you're just like,
That's
amazing.
It was quite a moment, you know. Yeah. I back to that connection thing. I think I had another moment of that on that show.
Yeah.
They gave me tickets to hand out to my friends and family to come watch the show live.
Yeah.
And the problem is all my family lives in another part of Canada. We were in Toronto, and I live in Winnipeg.
Oh, okay.
So I got this intuition that said, hand out the tickets on the street to people and just invite random strangers. So I did.
Oh, how fun.
But then, little did I know, I'm watching the rerun of me on Canadian Idol, and there I am singing on national TV, and all of a sudden the camera pans over to this group of strangers I gave tickets to on the street, and the caption comes up, Keith's friends and family on the TV. And I'm thinking, I don't even know these people. And my mom's calling, who are these people? And I remember saying to her, Mom, somehow we're all connected. And it actually turns out one of the people I gave a ticket to happened to run an organization called Free the Children.
Wow.
And that led me over to Kenya, Africa to do some volunteer work with them, where I built schools for a summer and ended up getting to go to Dubai and traveled there. It's pretty amazing.
How amazing.
It's all about listening to that intuition.
Isn't it? It's about, and it's, you know, the choices in the universe, listening, attracting, that kind of thing, you know, and it's just like you had that thought, just like your writing just kept coming, and it's just being open to the universe and open to new things, that instinct you had. I'll just pass these things out.
I love it. Well, yeah. I mean, in every single moment, Michelle, I really do believe we have a choice, and we can choose. We talk about this in the Course in Miracles, but we have a choice between love and fear.
Mm-hmm.
And fear to me can be disguised, but it's really that part that kind of separates, where
right.
when we move into love, it's like we get these little whispers, these little cues that say, you know, hand out the tickets on the street, play The Cat Came Back in grade 7, call Michelle and come back on the show. Like, if we listen to the whisper, we are constantly being led to where we need to be in perfect timing.
Yes.
Do you find this?
Yes, I do. What I find are, you know, signs, and maybe I'm just, I don't know, schizophrenic or something, but there's like little signs that, I mean, literally signs of, you know, those, you think of people you haven't seen in 15 years. I get a call from a woman who I worked with in radio 15 years ago. I mean, we were buddies and kind of hung out, you know, that kind of thing. She goes, hey, hey, girl, I wrote this 600-page book because it's about the afterlife and my out-of-body experiences and all of my people I interviewed and who we knew in the past. And do you want to chat? I mean, I was really thinking of her like that week.
Oh, wow.
That long. That's the example. I mean, that kind of thing, you know. So.
Yeah, just like what we think about shows up.
It does.
Especially when we're tuned in.
That's the thing, is tuning in. And the more we tune into our emotions and connect the emotion with the visualization and the intention, boy, that's creating right there on the quantum level.
Absolutely it is. Yeah.
By the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch. This is Dr. Michelle with you as usual. If you'd like to email me and ask a question to my special guest, Keith McPherson, and he's talking about his book, Making Sense of Mindfulness, please do so. StraightTalkDoc@gmail.com. Also, if you would like to put in a live call, 323-203-0815. A lot of folks are shy. They don't want to get their voice on the air here.
This is a great practice, anybody listening, though. If you start listening to your intuition, if you just get this little intuition, like, I need to call and ask a question right now.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you're having one of those days where you just are a little lost or confused. We're sitting here ready to help you out.
That is beautiful. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. So we're going to, I'd like to sort of jump into some principles that you talk about. And they're easy to understand, basically, but they make so much sense. And we can put these principles into practice, and they just sort of transform us. They really do. So I want listeners to start, as you said, we're here to help create more of the lives they would like. So very clearly stated, the various principles that have to do with making sense of mindfulness. So we're going to talk about those. By the way, in case you just tuned in here, you can listen to the show and the beginning of it as well. We'll be up in the archives as soon as we get off the air on my webpage here on LA Talk Radio. Also, speaking about which, just check it out, LA Talk Radio's Facebook page. We're live here sitting in the studio. And you can, you know, join in if you'd like, see us. If you want to get yourself on the air, you can be live on Facebook as well. That would be fun to have you all to give us a call. So do you think if we have time, maybe we could do some kind of, we could do some kind of, just a mindfulness like exercise a little bit later.
Absolutely. I would love to guide one of those.
That would be so cool.
Yeah.
Maybe a quickie.
Sure.
At the end of the show. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
I love those little quick brush ups, you know, in our brains, you know, the 10 minute ones or something like
that. Okay. Yeah. I'd love to lead one of those.
Cool. That'd be great. That'd be really awesome. And do not operate heavy machinery when we do that. So I had a person come on who is a hypnosis expert. I mean, she'd been doing it for like 30 years and we did a...
Wow.
So we had to have this disclaimer, you know.
Not good while you're driving. Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you're on your computer at work, just kind of put your head down and whatever. So let's talk about the five principles that really help folks out, that they can really get mindfulness and start practicing it.
Yeah.
So everything begins as an inner dream.
Yes, it does.
What do you mean by this?
Yeah, well, if you think about it, everything that you're focusing your attention on right now was only once imagined. From the chair you're sitting on, the clothes you're wearing, the fact we can broadcast live on Facebook here right now. Like, this is incredible that somebody had to go into their imagination to create this. So this first principle of mindfulness suggests that anything that you're thinking about in your imagination is the beginning. It's where things originate. Imagine, when you hear the word imagine, I slow it down. I hear two words, image in. The images in your mind. We were talking about this a little earlier on the show.
Yeah.
But what we're thinking about in that inner dream place starts showing up in the world around us. So that's really the essence of this principle. If we were to play a little game right now, and it's almost like Family Feud, and I'm just going to like say half a sentence. And if the people listening or yourself want to just blurt out, how would you answer this, right?
Okay.
So let's start with this. Let's do this one first. My job is, how would you fill in the blank? My job is.
Okay, every listeners out there, fill in the blank.
Yeah. Love is.
Okay.
Relationships are. Politicians are. You know? I'm curious
I almost
to hear
said
what
it.
You had to
Whoops.
Say. Whoopsies. You know, money is, right? I am. How do you fill in the blank? how you fill in that blank at the end of those sentences right now without overthinking it is your inner dream that's been playing out in your consciousness, right? So if you were like, money is hard to come by, for example, the more we tell ourselves that story in the inner imagination, we start seeing that as true, you know, or love stinks, like the song, love stinks. Love so hard, I can't find the right partner, right? The stories we're telling ourselves in our mind is where all things begin. So part of this, everything begins as an inner dream, is to notice how you're filling in the blanks at the end of these sentences, right? All these things are just neutralities. Money, it just is. Love just is. Politicians, they just are. But how we're choosing to see them is going to start shaping how we see the world around us. So if you catch yourself telling yourself a story like money is hard to come by or love is, you know, really challenging, the awareness of noticing, wow, I'm telling a story that I don't actually want to be living.
Right.
You know, we can start shifting it right now with consciousness. And this becomes a real mindfulness practice.
Okay. Yes.
There's a woman named Nancy Hulla I had on a podcast of mine. And she said, we are the story we tell ourselves.
Right.
And I really believe that.
Yes.
You know, the story we're telling ourselves in our head, that's who we are. That's who we become.
We really are.
Yeah.
So are you saying that we should sort of start changing up those thoughts that, you know, when the way we answer the end of those questions, love is a drag because I never get it, to love is something that is amazing, or, you know, whatever, love is in my heart for whoever, make it more specific, for my mom or for my child or whatever it is.
Sure. So, I mean, if you're looking for a romantic partner, love is on the way, and the right partner is going to show up in the perfect time. And, you know, if that feels a little foreign and you're like, well, that's not true, there's a part of you that's not true. See, part of this is also not just thinking, but you got to start feeling it.
Yes.
So, you know, one of my teachers, Wayne Dyer, used to say, assume the feeling of the wish fulfilled.
Yes.
So it's like, I like to close my eyes and think, you know, the right partner is on the way. And I feel into what that would be like.
Yes.
You know?
You visualize it. You see it. Yeah. And then you have to add that emotion.
Right.
So you'll have that heart-brain coherence going on.
You'll see it when you believe it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's really true. And I think that the most difficult thing for my listeners and clients who's come to see me is, how can I believe it? Well, you got neural patterns that have been kicking in there for how many years? 30, 35 years, 40 years now? You know, and so you got to just be gentle on yourself and just starting to practice those, you know, really more, you know, look at yourself, think about, you know, the way you're really, you know, conceptualizing these things.
I even encourage people to put up like pictures around in their space of like, what kind of living environment do you want? You know, put a picture of what your dream partner might look like. You know,
yes.
I actually had a $5 bill up above my bed, and I took a marker and put a bunch of zeros behind the five.
Yeah.
I thought, you know what? This is what I want to attract. So when I wake up in the morning, I'm going to look at the ceiling and think about $5 million falling out of the sky. And to be quite honest, my income increased. Now, I'm not a $5 million author yet, but I actually start feeling my way into abundance, that it flows to me easily. And it shifted.
Yes.
It really shifted the way I experience life.
And it's the way you created it. Your mind was going, yes, this is it. And every day when you wake up or you go down, you know, to sleep, you're looking at it and you're seeing it, and that's embracing the reality of it. So your brain doesn't know the difference between you having that in the bank and you laying there in the bed imagining it. The brain just says, oh, I'm already there.
Yeah.
Right? The brain goes, yep, there.
Yeah, in the framework, I call that the unconscious mind part of us.
Yes.
This part that it takes everything very literally. It doesn't have a filter. So when you start thinking, you know, I'm a millionaire, your unconscious starts going, oh, you're a millionaire. Okay, let's create that for you.
Yes.
Right? And it's just, it's so amazing that we have that ability to,
we do.
To shift our reality
yes.
in the unconscious mind.
Yeah, yeah, we do. And it's just, it's our minds are just our brains. You know, where's the mind anyway? I don't know. We're working on that one. Anyway,
we need to call in Deepak Chopra for that question.
Oh yeah,
where is your mind?
I know. And he's so cute. I mean, he's 15, 20 years in medical studies.
Yeah,
and in quantum physics, he studied. He lived with the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi for a long time.
Yeah,
and standing watching him doing a presentation, and he goes, what it all comes down to is love. thank you. And he walked off stage.
Wow.
And then he came back. I mean, he thought that was pretty cool.
That's funny.
I liked it. I thought it was funny,
it's like the Beatles. All you need is love.
That's it. That's true.
It's true.
That's right, honey. So, okay, let's get with it with second principle here. You encourage us to expose the saboteur within us. Why do we sabotage ourselves?
Wow, right.
So often. Why do we do that?
Well, there's a primal part of our brain, the amygdala, that is trying to keep us safe.
Yeah.
You know, and it's linked back to ancient times when it would say, don't go out on the street because you might get attacked by a lion.
Yeah. Well,
you
true,
know,
true.
But chances are that it's not going to happen.
Right.
But there is this primal part of our brain that's like, they call it fight or flight. You
right.
know?
Right. Right.
And so to me, I think this sabotaging part of ourself and our brain is like that overprotective parent that's trying to stop us from being at harm or at risk.
Yeah.
So a lot of us, we don't realize that's playing out and we take it very literally. And we find ourselves getting stuck in these old patterns of over safety, like over protection.
Right, right.
But we never take the risk.
That's so true. We don't.
Yeah. So I think of the saboteur as, for me, I experienced it as a voice that comes up in my head. Mm. And it's almost, I can see it like a little stick character in my head and it's talking and it's saying, you're not doing a very good job right now.
Mm.
Or you need to be doing more or you're going to fail. So you better not actually go and do that specific thing, you know?
Sure.
Some people don't experience it as a voice. They feel it more as just an instinctual feeling.
Sure.
It might be that part of you when you're trying to sleep at night and your wheels are turning, going, oh, I have so much to do. How am I going to get through this? I shouldn't have. I should have.
Yes.
All those shoulds on our list.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Those are signs of what I would call the saboteur.
Yes.
That part of you that's trying to protect you, but it's actually sabotaging you from being present.
Yeah, it really is.
Right?
It pulls us away. You know, we're just going ruminating, as we say,
totally.
You know, in psychotherapy or whatever. We are. So we just have to kind of pull that back, recognize it, see what we're doing, and just say, okay, let's cool the mind here. Let's use some of Keith McPherson's principles so I can relax.
I say expose the saboteur for good reason, because if we don't actually name that is playing out in the moment, we actually find ourselves in this place of constantly in fear mode.
Right.
And fear, the acronym for it is false evidence appearing real. Most of what we worry about doesn't actually come into fruition.
Yeah.
Yet our saboteur has us believing it might. So we better be very safe here. They compare
really
this.
True.
I don't know if you've heard about this experiment with fleas, but if you put a flea in a jar,
heard of flea circuses, but I don't.
This is kind of like a flea circus.
Okay.
It's around saboteur. It's an amazing experiment. If you put a flea in a jar, it's going to jump right out.
Right.
Because a flea can jump 100 times its height.
So
that's like a human jumping to the top of a skyscraper, really. But if you put a flea in a jar, it's going to jump right out. In this experiment, if you put a lid on the jar, the flea jumps only so high to hit the bottom of the lid. And then it's like, ouch, this is not so enjoyable.
Yes.
So over time, it actually trains itself to jump only so high as to not hit the bottom of the lid. And in the experiment, the interesting thing is if you take the lid off the jar... For the rest of its life, that flea doesn't jump out of the jar.
Wow.
It's conditioned itself to only jump so high. And this is what ends up happening to us when we have a saboteur controlling our life, a limiting belief, so to speak, where we're like, I can't do that because if I jump out of this jar, like I might be in danger in some way.
Yes.
So for
that's fascinating.
Isn't that amazing?
God, it is.
So for a lot of us, like we're operating in reactive mode.
Mm-hmm.
There's, I work as a leadership coach and there's this program called the Leadership Circle. They've surveyed over 1 million leaders around the world, and they found that 80% of leadership in corporate America is operating in reactive mode, meaning the saboteur's running the show. So we see a lot of people going into places of like complying, like people pleasers, where they just say yes, even though they might not agree because they're scared to lose their job.
Right, right.
Or we see people more in sort of like control freak mode where they're
totally,
they're just trying as perfectionism, like I got to get through this. Like these are saboteurs or those people that are like protecting themselves from, you know, maybe failing or not having the answers.
Right.
So the saboteur part of us is like operating this place
lurking.
Called, it's lurking and it's keeping us in this state of reactivity
right.
as opposed to us creating that inner dream from a place of consciousness. Mm. It's like that overprotective part of us that keeps us stuck in the jar.
Oh, well
so
said,
it's,
man.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when somebody says he has a flea brain, it's like, that's not too bad because he's learning, you know.
Right. Exactly.
It's like an old saying, I guess. I don't know. In case you just tuned in here, guys, you're on the couch with Dr. Michelle here and my special guest, Keith McPherson. He's written a book called Making Sense of Mindfulness, 5 Principles to Integrate Mindfulness Practice into Your Daily Life. And Keith has done so many things in teaching people about mindfulness, yoga teacher, life coach, leads conventions. You have a podcast. Amazing. What's your podcast again, so listeners?
The podcast is called Let's Connect.
Yeah.
And it's because nice. I travel a lot with my work, I get to mm-hmm. meet people all over the world and mm-hmm. have them on the podcast, and we get to connect and hear what they're doing. And it's that's usually so cool. thought leaders, people doing sure. amazing things. And
oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really awesome. Yeah. Speaking about tuning in, guys, in case you missed some of the show today, you can tune in. You can go back to the archives here on my webpage on LA Talk Radio on the couch. And you can listen to the show, download, replay, whatever. And all the information about Keith will be up tomorrow, so you can get more info and check him out on his website, which will tell you how to find him as well. And, you know, today we can do that. We're also live on LA Talk Radio's Facebook page, so if you want to click on that, you can see what we look like in the studio, what we're doing, and the peaceful environment here and how lovely it is. And if you'd like to get your voice, this is a lot of stuff. If you want to get your voice here on the radio and you want to ask a question, 323-203-0815. That's the number, 323-203-0815. Email me, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. I'm sort of a disc jockey, I guess. Anyway, guys, love to hear from you. And we're talking about Keith McPherson's latest book, Making Sense of Mindfulness, and it's really great. It's got five main principles in order to help you sort of live the life you want, and how to focus on things, and how to what type of thinking and practices that you might want to do that will really pretty much change your life. That's why I love the book, and you're the real deal. You live your truth in your book.
Oh, which, thank you. Yeah, I practice. It's all a practice.
It sure is. But it's practice is fun.
It is. I love that.
Right?
It really is fun.
It is. And it really, you know, the more you do it, the easier it is. And that's the way it goes. So we're running on to principle number three now. And this is the biggie. How do we do this? You suggest we open our minds. How the heck do we do that?
Oh, there's so many practices to do this. You know, I was inspired to write this principle. My dad actually, back in the 70s, before I was born, was diagnosed with testicular cancer.
Oh.
And it was back in the day when they were still kind of testing chemotherapy
yeah,
treatments.
Yeah.
And my mom, in the middle of all that, got pregnant. And
wow.
Yeah. And they suggested they abort the child because they didn't know the effects of the chemotherapy and all of that.
Right.
And so my parents had to make a pretty crucial decision at the time. And talking about exposing the saboteur and opening the mind to the possibilities, they decided to go through with having the child. And it's really the reason that I'm here is because of that decision.
Wow.
And I was born. They said, you know, you should abort this child because we don't know how it's going to turn out. And this, you know, there's a good chance that it will have like mental issues and be, you know, defected in some way. And the fact that I was born and then my two brothers were born, I think back, I mean, I wasn't here consciously,
yeah.
but I think back to that decision and just the opportunity of them having to open their mind.
Wow.
And, you know, to me, the practice of opening our mind is really about getting into the present moment and realizing that all fear is not in this moment. You can't be in fear in this present moment.
Right, right. Because it has to do with your memories in the past and the possibilities in the future because of the stuff icky that happened in the past. So
yeah.
Right.
So for them to make that decision, they had to be present because they were thinking about the future and all that could happen. And I don't know if we should. And if they would have given into that, my life wouldn't be here. So I think about that with gratitude.
Yes.
But this practice of coming back to the present moment is one of the key ways to open our mind. When you notice yourself wandering off in a thought that's of stress, anxiety, fear, there's a good chance that you've left the building. You know, our mind wanders over 47% of the time. That means like we've actually missed half this radio show.
Yeah, we have.
We've left the building. We were somewhere else in our mind.
We have left the building. What am I having for dinner tonight? No, I'm kidding.
Right?
But I didn't think that. But
yeah.
I did.
So this practice, I call it anchoring.
Anchoring, right. That's what you call it.
Yeah, and it's even just anchoring in for a minute to the breathing and just noticing like my inhale is spilling in through the nose and my exhale out through the nose or mouth. And I'm just coming back to this one now moment. And when I get into this present moment, all is well. And I have this like open slate. Mm. It's like the jar lid is open and I look up and I see that there's all possibility.
Yes.
And then I get in tune with myself. I go, what is it right now that I need to know the most? And that's, to me, really starting to tune into that place of intuition. So this technique of breathing, anchoring, present moment opens our mind up to the possibility of where do I want to focus my attention? Mm-hmm. Energy flows where your attention goes.
Boy,
right?
Is that true.
So this is what this is all about.
Oh, that's beautifully said.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's true. So in your book, it's Making Sense of Mindfulness. You have the five principles that really help people tune in and really get with what mindfulness is and how to really change their lives through the particular mindfulness habits and principles that you talk about. So now, you talk about in number four, because I love open our minds, by the way. That's really, that's a practice.
It sure is.
Yeah, got to do it. But I mean, it's amazing what starts happening when you do that, when you can click into that. Live mind fully aware.
Yeah.
Okay? I love the way you wrote that.
Fully is in cap locks.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Fully.
Yeah.
Come on now. How do we do that, though?
Wow. Well, it's been said that most of us only operate consciously in 1/3 of our mind, meaning that there's a whole other 2/3 here that we don't actually consciously recognize most of the time. Mm-hmm. But just to paraphrase this principle, we have a conscious mind that's always making decisions. Mm-hmm. Should I do this or that? Mm-hmm. There's an unconscious mind. Now, this is a third of our mind that most of us don't realize is operating. Mm. As you said earlier, this is the part of us that takes things very literally. Mm-hmm. It runs our emotions. Mm-hmm. It holds all of our memory. Mm-hmm. Some people would say it's actually our physical body, because there's a part of us that's remembering automatically to breathe our breath, you know, to grow our hair. Mm-hmm. So the conscious mind and the unconscious are always speaking.
Yes.
You think a thought, your unconscious mind remembers it all the way back to when you were a kid, right?
Yes.
And vice versa, when you get those intuitions, it's like memory popping up.
Right.
So that your conscious mind, the decision-making part, will remember.
Yes.
There's a third part that often gets neglected, especially in psychology. Mm-hmm. The Hawaiians would call it kane. You might reference that as like your higher self or spirit or source. Mm-hmm. It's that creative part of you. Mm-hmm. It's where all the good songs come from. It's where those ideas that just, I've got an idea, comes in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they say that higher self part of you comes directly through the unconscious mind. It doesn't come directly to your thinking conscious mind. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if you want to tap into that creative source, mm-hmm. that part of you that's connected to everything, and just it's where all of the good imagination comes, we need to focus our thinking mind to the body, to the unconscious.
Yes.
And listen. And that's when spirit or higher self can come through and inform us.
Okay.
So if you think about this, these are the three parts of us.
Okay.
Florence Shin said that prayer is us consciously dialing or phoning God or spirit. Mm-hmm. This was back in the 20s.
Wow.
Intuition is God or spirit phoning us, coming through the body mind. This is why, like, if I listen to my heart or I've got a gut feeling, you know those moments?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the unconscious or the intuition coming through the body trying to inform us.
Right.
Yet so often our thinking mind doesn't listen.
Right.
Know? You get that like rumbling stomach and the spirit, the body's trying to say, like, feed me. Mm-hmm. And then the mind's like, you don't have time to eat. You got to work through lunch. You're so busy. So we don't listen. Mm-hmm. But if we tune our mind into listening, we end up getting informed. Mm-hmm. And there's a flow that takes over.
Yes.
It becomes easier.
Right.
We need to start trusting that part of us. So in mind fully aware, it's getting these three parts of ourself into alignment. Mm. And that's when we start experiencing what they call kana loa, which means that higher consciousness where it all works together.
Oh, yeah. It's being aware and present of body.
Yeah.
Also, you know, there's so many sensory neurites that are in our heart, you know, like what, 40,000 or something. And that's a lot more than in our amygdala. and you know, the feeling part and the limbic system of our brain that's really, you know, emotional. So it's so true when we tune into our heart. And every organ has sensory neurites, you know, but when we tune into that part of our bodies, you know, we can really just say, what do I need? Or what is my body saying to me? You know, now, for all you folks out there listening who have somatic issues, disorders, like I'm, you know, my heart's palpitating, I'm going to the ER, I'm going to die, or I think I have, you know, brain cancer because I get headaches. Or good for you for checking these things out. But this doesn't mean focus on your body and manifest and create horrible things happening to you. This is not what Keith's talking about.
No. This is like just learning how to listen. You see, the physical body is trying to give you signs that something's out of alignment. Mm-hmm. You're not paying attention.
Yeah.
That's dis-ease, literally. Yes. You know, yes. If you think about that on a physical level,
right.
Inflammation in the body when we're stressed. Think about what happens when we're stressed.
Oh,
our
yeah.
mind is overgoing. The body's trying to get our attention. Mm. Inflammation happens. Yeah. Eventually, dis-ease, trying to get us to listen, you know?
Yeah.
You know, Brian Kest, one of my favorite teachers, says that 90% of our physical dis-ease is caused by mental tension, mental stress.
Is that true?
So it's like, our mind is so crucial here. What are we paying attention to?
Yes. Yeah. And it's all scientific. It's all medical. It is, which is physics and spirituality combined. It's real. It is what it is. It's all real. So let's talk about your fifth principle. I want to get to this because it's pretty cool. You talk about the importance of feelings and the words I am. Now, I remember reading the book I Am back when I was 13. I didn't get it. Couldn't get it. Too complicated. Too way above my hormones that time. Just couldn't pull it in. But I was like, I am. What a cool book. You know, but it was. So what is that about? Why is it important for us to say I am blank?
Yeah.
Or maybe not blank.
I am all. Yeah. Well, I am are two of the most powerful words in our thinking and our speaking because there's no denying the fact that you are right now. Mm. You are. I am. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, these are very powerful words. And when we start breaking this down, the I am principle, you start realizing that at the core of it, if I just kept asking you, Michelle, who are you? I am, I am, I am. Eventually, it would get to the point where you realize, like you said, I am everything.
Mm-hmm.
Everything.
Yes.
I am everything. And there's a level of reality where we start seeing ourselves in everything around us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all connected at that level.
Yes.
This is very interesting to me, but they talk about this whole idea of where we originated from. No one really knows.
Right.
Beyond the mother's womb, where do we come from?
Right.
It's a place of nowhere, or maybe it's everything, but it's nowhere really. It's not consciously physical.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden we're born and boom, we're like now here.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the same spelling and everything. Nowhere, now here. The same word broken in half. And all of a sudden we're in this physical body and we're like, I am here, right? And we move through our life, but we realize that there's an expiry date. And then all of a sudden at some point, we leave these bodies, I think, or we're not in them anymore.
Yes.
Where do we go? We go back to the nowhere, this place of oneness, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And Muktananda, a teacher, was asked, what is real?
Mm.
And his answer really was profound around this. He said, that which is real never changes. So when you think about the body that you're in, I mean, we're constantly changing.
Sure.
I just look back at pictures of myself 10 years ago and go, oh my gosh, I didn't have gray hair. Or like my hair wasn't fading out. Or there
you're
my
so
wrinkles,
cute.
Right?
Like, you're so funny.
Start thinking
Crack
about
me
this.
Up.
I'm not even the same person cellularly that walked in this studio.
That's like, exactly right.
And same with you.
Yep.
We're always changing.
Yep.
So we get into this mindset that we're actually not real. It's constantly changing. That which is real never changes.
Mm.
So that part where we originated, that oneness, that nowhereness that's not in the physical form, there's an energy there. And if we can start seeing that while we're alive in these bodies, we start realizing that there is a oneness underneath it all.
Mm.
And so this place of I am is to realize that I am that place of everything.
Wow.
There's an old African greeting. If we were to look into each other's eyes right now and kind of look beyond the surface of the physical that's always changing.
Right.
And just if you were to say, I want to be seen.
Right.
And I were to look into your eyes and say, and I see you.
Right.
Right. There's a depth here beyond the physical.
Yes.
And when we start seeing this love to that place, it's we realize our actual essence.
It's true. And a lot of people are afraid to do that because it's kind of scary to show yourself and look in other people's eyes and allow yourself to have that trust and like, you know, it's just old brain stuff.
We've been so socialized to believe otherwise.
I know.
But little babies, when they first are born and they look in the mirror, they don't even recognize themselves most of the time because they're still in that place of oneness.
That's right.
And then they finally see themselves about 2 years old and they start laughing because they're like, oh my gosh, this is funny. I'm in a body, right?
Yeah.
But then we know what happens. You become a teenager and you start getting conditioned to think like, don't even look in the mirror.
Yeah, no.
Right? Like, who are you to look in the mirror?
That's so perfectly said.
The invitation here is to return back to that place you originated while you're alive and to know it for the first time.
Yes.
Like to see yourself in the mirror and go, I am handsome. I am, hey, cutie. Like I am beautiful.
Yeah.
Like to start seeing that part of you underneath all of that part of us that's judging and telling us we need to be more, do more. Now, underneath that, there is a miracle. There's a love. There's peace. That's who you are in the mirror. Just practice that.
Love that which you are.
Yeah.
And knock out all those old messages that you've sponged up since you were little about what you aren't.
Yeah.
That's right.
Now we're talking.
There you go.
Yeah.
Guess what? It's out of time almost.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know,
I can't believe it.
You wanted to do a practice? Let's leave the listeners with a challenge. At some point today, get in front of the mirror and look in your eyes and just something positive to yourself.
See
beyond underneath the surface. I'm beautiful. I'm loved.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Really good. It's hard to do that sometimes.
It sure
can allow it, folks. Okay. All right. Now, where can folks pick up your book, Making Sense of Mindfulness, 5 Principles to Integrate Mindfulness Practice into Your Daily Life?
Yeah.
Live on Facebook, LA Talk.
My website, keithmacpherson.ca, like Canada, keithmacpherson.ca. It's also available on Amazon and most bookstores as well. So, yeah.
Exactly. And it's MacPherson.
Correct.
MacPherson.
Yep.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for being here. You're the best.
Michelle, right back at you. You are so much fun to spend time with. Thank you.
Thank you. One of my favorite guests ever. Always ever.
No, I love coming here. Let's do it again soon.
All right. You got it. You're on. And I'm looking forward to your next book, too.
Yes, it's on its way.
All right. Cool. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Stay here on LA Talk Radio. We got more great shows coming up, as usual. More entertaining, irreverent, and cool talk radio hosts. I'll be back next week, and we're going to be talking to somebody who is quite young. We're talking about pubescence and learning things. Man, she's just a brilliant genius. She's a young person who has manifested herself into being a leader in the spiritual community and also written her own book. She's like 15. What? Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. Take care of yourself first, and then you'll be great for others. Bye-bye now.